Mormon Matters Podcast is a production of the Open Stories Foundation and is seeking to build financial support separate from Mormon Stories Podcast. All donations to Mormon Matters are fully tax deductible and go directly towards keeping the podcast alive and towards building a community of support for Mormons like you. To support the podcast or to join the community, please become a monthly subscriber today at mormonmatters.org.
Welcome, everyone, to another edition of the Mormon Matters Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Weatherspoon, and we are excited to do another topic here today. Rather than something particularly in the news this week, we're going to go into one of our cool topic modes, and we are going to give equal time to men and messages about men and fatherhood. Back at the end of April, we did a wonderful podcast discussion on motherhood, and a lot of you responded really well to that, so we thought we'd try it with men, and I've got great panelists, and I want to introduce them right now. So Scott Heffernan is back with us for the second time. Scott was on our panel about keeping Mormonism weird, one of my favorite ones that we did. But Scott, would you remind everybody who you are, and especially what your connection is with this topic of Mormon men?
Sure. I'm Scott Heffernan, and I am a Mormon man. I'm the ultimate manly man.
Oh, man.
No, just kidding. I'm not that. You called me probably because I co-founded a blog called Modern Mormon Men with a buddy, John Anderton. And so we have a blog that we run that deals with topics relating to men and just, you know, cultural and church and kind of everything. It's a eclectic blog with kind of, you know, traditional believers to more agnostic believers and things like that. So I think that's why I'm here.
Great. Yeah, well, that's definitely it. Plus, we just like you. And think you're insightful on lots of
thanks
things.
Thanks for having me back. I really appreciate it.
No, it's fun. And if I recall, you live up in the Seattle area. Is there anything else just more from the normal everyday life you want to share?
Sure. Yeah, I live in Seattle with my wife and son and one on the way. And I'm a photographer and graphic designer, and recently took a job with kind of a novelty company that's been really fun. It's kind of my dream job, so I'm really excited about that.
Cool. Hopefully that'll keep going. That's awesome.
Yeah. Thanks.
Stephen Carter, you're back for our second time. We appreciate that. You were on the one with the Sunstone and Dialogue and sort of the Intellectual Tradition of Mormon podcast that we did. Would you remind everybody a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, I'm Stephen, and I'm the editor of Sunstone currently. Anything else you want to know?
Well, there's something that you do that is maybe unusual for a Mormon man.
Right. The reason I'm here is because for the past 2.5 years, I've been a stay-at-home dad. My wife goes off and goes into the high-powered world of education software design, and I stay home and play with the baby and help my two sons get their education, and then at night I dive into the world of Sunstone.
Yes, you do, and Sunstone recently ran a sort of a roundtable discussion transcript of it that you put together for a Sunstone symposium with other stay-at-home dads. So,
yeah,
we'll look forward to any insights from that, and then, of course, you're just bright and talented and interesting always, so we're glad to have you. I know you're going to, some of our pre-conversation, I know you're going to head us down some fun directions, so thanks. Thanks for being on. And then finally, we have our third person who has never been on the show before, but he is a great friend of mine, and his name is Adam Jacobson. And Adam, would you introduce yourself?
Sure. I'm a lifelong member of the church, raised in Southern California, went to BYU and the University of Utah. I lived mostly in Utah, northern Utah, for the last 20 or so years. Just really glad to be asked to participate, and kind of been in awe of you, Dan, and your panelists as I've been following Mormon Matters, and really, really appreciate what you're doing.
Well, thanks. And I just let listeners know, Adam and I kind of go to lunch every couple of weeks, so this is just normal stuff for us. We're just going to talk the deep and fun stuff, aren't we?
Yeah, it's going to be out there now. That's scary.
Okay. Well, we can delete your last name if you ever need us to before post-production's over. But anyway. Well, guys, I'd love to get going with this and do a launch. And so as I, the first thing that kind of comes up to me is the dominant equation, or at least the things that seem to always be paired about. So we might as well just deal with this right away. Let's launch into a discussion of women and their purpose in life is motherhood. And we've thoroughly discussed that in that other podcast. And it seems like the ideal thing, or the thing that men must, if we're going to get lost in anything, if the church is going to give us messages about ourselves, it's always going to say, you're thing is priesthood. Women have motherhood as their connection with God, creative forces, etc. You have priesthood. Some people, obviously lots of people have picked apart that particular pairing. Where do you guys see it? Do you think there's anything good or important about keeping that pairing together, or where are the biggest tensions that you'd love to pick apart a little bit? So, Scott, if you don't mind, I'll start with you.
Sure. I don't think it's a fair pairing. It was on your motherhood podcast, which I thought was interesting. But it's woman is to motherhood as man is to priesthood, when it should be woman is to motherhood as man is to fatherhood, right? Parenting is something that's really important. One kind of area I wanted to just mention that where I think this causes trouble or is unhealthy. So, women are, their worth is in their ability to be a good parent or a good mom. And it translates to man's worth is his ability to also provide and protect the family, but also, latched on there is to do his priesthood duties. And I've noticed with a lot of Mormon men, they're excused from family duties to go do priesthood duties. And I think it causes attention, if a man's always running off to go to a meeting or to go do his home teaching or to help someone move, which are all great and, service is wonderful and everything, but it's kind of okay for him to neglect the family and take off and go do these things that are, these good righteous things. But it's kind of not okay for the mom or the woman to do that, because her role is with the children. And so, the dad is kind of excused to do these things, but I think it causes a lot of tension in the marriage and isn't necessarily a healthy model for how it should be done.
I agree. Either of you other guys, you've probably heard that. Obviously, we've heard some rhetoric that at least says something different, right? You occasionally hear the message of, sometimes it's far more important to be home with the family, if things happen or not. But in general, Stephen or Adam, are you agreeing that with Scott that there's sort of the free pass?
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting thing. It reminds me of a talk that I heard from Dieter Uchtdorf a couple of years ago, where he talked about John Roe Moyle. He was a stone cutter for the Salt Lake Temple, and here's the quote: "Every Monday, John left home at 2 o'clock in the morning, walked 6 hours in order to be at his post on time. On Friday, he would leave his work at 5 o'clock in the evening and walk almost till midnight before arriving home. He did this year after year." So, Elder Uchtdorf was holding this up as a wonderful thing. What a dedicated man! And it was quite a confusing talk to me, because it held up a person who essentially had no home life as being a great person. And I totally understand how important it was during that time for some of the saints to give of their talents to making the temple and stuff like that. But it's interesting that someone like that and his sacrifice of family would be brought up as an example to modern day Mormon men.
Okay. I mean, I would challenge, I'm not, obviously, I agree with you that there's a tension there. What if he had been on a mission during that period of time? Or is that different than, Adam, I know that occasionally you have to go out of work for a week or two. Now, of course, you have email and phone conversation, things that he weren't. But sometimes there's physical absence that's okay.
Yeah. I kind of agree. I really agree with Scott. we are given a pass for our priesthood duties, and I was just trying to put a quote from Elder Anderson's talk, kind of flip it around from his talk in conference this last conference, where he said, "Motherhood is not a hobby; it is a calling. It is not something you do if you can squeeze the time in. It is what God gave you time for." But we know the undercurrent in Mormonism is that if you flip that around to fatherhood, you have to take time off for those priesthood duties, and sometimes they take a lot of time. And there can be repercussions in your family life. That's true.
Yeah, actually, that brings up a memory in my mind. When I went off on my mission, I had a girlfriend that I loved very much, and she waited for me, and we got married when I got home, and we are still married. And one of the things that she told me many years later was that she felt the first prickings of I guess you'd call it feminism when I went off on my mission, because she said it was your job to go out and do the dramatic work and it was my job to stay home. And I realized that's kind of the way Mormonism is structured from when you're very young all the way to the grave, is that the men go off, they go into the mountains as Boy Scouts, they go off on their missions as young men, and then they go off to work. And so men go off. But the interesting thing is, that's very much, you know, the way things have been for millennia. And so I almost wonder, what is it that we're trying to wrestle with here? How long has this been going on?
Yeah, so no, definitely men and women gender roles, and these did not originate within Mormonism, that's for sure. It does seem, and eventually I want to get into the conversation of, it seems like a lot of other religious traditions are seeming to pull apart those gender roles and to ask questions about the patriarchal society and sort of these different sorts of things. And Mormonism doesn't seem to be doing that, but I don't want to quite go there yet, Stephen, if that's all right. So first of all, Noelle, when she was waiting, she still was going to school and things like that, but she just felt like the church was discouraging her from being the dramatic missionary too, or
no, it was kind of the lack of a story for her to inhabit. What is it that you hear at church about a girl who's her age? Who's, you know, 19 or 20, you hear, you know, she gets married or she goes to school. And we should talk about this some more later, because I have more to say about what happens when there's a lack of a cultural story to help a person assign meaning to their lives. But if you think about it, when a boy goes off on a mission and leaves a girl home, what is the story told about the girl who is home? The story about the boy is very easy to tell. We're constantly telling it. But what is the story that we tell about the girl? And that's something that you can just think about if you want.
Waiting. Her life really isn't starting. You know, she's in limbo. Yeah. If that's the kinds of things. Uh-huh.
Well, you could say, I remember President Hinckley really putting an emphasis on education and saying that women should get all the education that they could possibly get. So, you know, supposedly she's in college, so she can help support a missionary when he gets home. And
but I think also it is very, very true that the message is they are to wait, or at least continue to fulfill that area of their life of getting married, because you see how many Dear Johns there are. And Stephen, that's awesome that it worked out. Almost everyone else I know left someone who they were going to get married when they got back. And, you know, the girl gets married before the guy comes home. And so I think there's kind of not a place. I think you're right. And, like you said, you want to go into it later. But so they go to the next thing, which is marrying someone. But if they're not going to wait 2 years for that, they'll marry someone else.
Right. There's that pull of the story. It's almost like a gravity. You say, what am I going to do with my life next? What's the next thing that my culture tells me to do? And that's a very strong pull.
Cool. Now, I don't want to leave this for sure, because so Scott, you kind of launched us into this, you know, women are to motherhood, men are to priesthood, when it really, the equivalency should have been fatherhood. And then you kind of took us into the area of we get the pass a little bit, at least as far as our evening time, you know, the times that we are home with the family, it's somehow we're excused to be a little bit less actively involved. Is there anything anybody else wants to say more about that, or just in general, why isn't fatherhood as strong as it should be, or would you argue that it should be stronger in that same connection that it is for women?
I think there's one illustration that I want to make. You know, this idea of, you know, the woman is the mother, woman is to motherhood as men is to the priesthood. And it's, you know, we get a pass and, you know, that's not good in my opinion, but it could be viewed as, oh, good. We, you know, we can go do our thing and come back and still be the good guy. But it, you know, definitely has negative things, and it's definitely kind of binding to us in a sense. What I wanted to share is my wife's mission president would give the lecture when they were, you know, returning home or whatever. And he would say, if you want to know if your man is honoring his priesthood, if he's going to be a good husband, just ask yourself, does he do 100% home teaching? You know, so our manhood, our ability to be a good husband and a good father is tied to our priesthood duties in a very real way. If we're doing our home teaching, then we're going to be a good husband. We're going to be a good father, rather than looking at things that might be more indicative of, you know, of that. And, you know, looking at traits that really, would he be a good father? Or is he just going to be going off doing, you know, home teaching all the time or whatever, you know, when duty calls, is he going to be there? So it's kind of, you know, it has its pros and cons, I guess. I think it's mostly cons personally.
Yeah, that's interesting. Wow. I have stuff to say on that, but please, you guys, jump in.
Let me, something I was thinking about as I was getting ready for this is every man can theoretically be a priesthood holder, right? But not every man and not every woman can be a father or mother in this life. And even if you do, a woman does get to be a mother in the next life, which, you know, our doctrine says that she will if she's faithful and all that. Maybe she doesn't want to be identified solely as a mother, you know. And Mormonism does have these roles of king and queen and priest and priestess that are part of the doctrine and are identifiers that you could probably relate to that are kind of separate from the mother and father roles. I don't know if there's any significance there to that.
Well, absolutely, and it sort of reminded me, you know, and Stephen, jump in, but it seemed like, you know, in the motherhood podcast that we did, the women were saying, we don't want to be known just as mothers. We don't love this rhetoric. We love our children. We love all the things that motherhood is teaching us, but it shouldn't be the be-all and end-all. And so you're saying the same thing here, Adam, that we have all these other roles to play too. But would any of you guys say that you'd want fatherhood any less emphasized for you, the way that they maybe say they would want motherhood?
Well, let me. I think one of the difficulties that we deal with trying to be fathers and trying to define our role as fathers is partly cultural, because, you know, 100 years ago, sons would go out with their fathers to, you know, work on the farm or learn the trade or things like that. And the sexes would sort of naturally divide at sort of the adolescent point. And then even earlier than that, for example, in Native Alaska, at about the age 11 or 12, all the boys would be taken to the men's house, and the boys would live in the men's house, and the women and the girls would live in all the huts. And while in the men's house, the boys would learn all the things you need to know in order to survive out on the tundra. And so our current culture doesn't really allow for the separation of the sexes to learn particular roles where a father can be a mentor to his son on many hours of the day, to be with him, to tutor him, to have all that time. You know, we're lucky to get 1 hour a day to be with our sons at all, or our daughters. And so I think that's one thing that kind of messes up what we're trying to do here, is that our culture is working against us. Western culture, American culture. Am I going in the wrong direction?
No, it's a very interesting direction. I just don't want to always jump in with my own thoughts. I want these guys to jump in.
Well, geez, Dan, are you not a man? Come on.
Scott, go, Scott.
Stand up, Dan. No, I want to explore that a little bit more later, too, when we talk about maybe Stephen, how he's a stay-at-home dad, and just kind of how our system is set up and how I think it's, you know, not the best thing, because it just the way the system is set up. We'll talk about it later, but with, you know, working full time and benefits, and kind of one parent has to be home in a sense, or is a goal that you both work part time or what. And we can talk more about that. I'm curious to hear how Stephen does it and things like that. So
I may disappoint you. We'll have to.
Okay, so I've asked a few questions. I don't know that they've got answered, and maybe that's because they're not that interesting and stuff too. But let me put out there, I think that we're having a conversation here that sort of is happening in the church. It seems like when I go to priesthood meeting, I'm hearing more and more, don't forget that your father's too. You know, there is sort of a new ethos for Mormon men that has to do with the diapers and paying attention and you know, you hate to have it be honor your wives and, you know, because they're so pedestal-ish, you know, and all that stuff. So you got to be careful with that. But there is sort of this rhetoric of dive right in and be a full-fledged parent. At the same time, they're still saying, here's the ideal, which is you're off making bacon. And then, of course, when your priest duty calls, you're doing that. But I do think there's something going on there. Would you guys agree that at least we're being taught to be fathers more than maybe we were at one time?
Absolutely. And I think, I don't know about your ward, but I look around and there's generally three or four babies in elders quorum, which I think is awesome.
Right.
So I think it is moved. And I don't, I mean, maybe it was like that, you know, 30 years ago too, but I don't know. That's, you know, what I've seen is babies in elders quorum, which I think is pointing to that, you know, men are stepping up and being the fathers and being encouraged to do so by the church.
Yeah, and I think, Dan, that we ought to see more training of young men to be fathers, you know, on the same level as the young women are being trained to be mothers. I think there is a disparity there as well.
Good point. Good. Stephen, do you want to jump in on that as far as, you know, trending, what you're seeing?
No, I agree. I think that the definition of father is much more active as far as the family goes than it used to be.
Okay, well, let me take us then into something. I think we were planning a little bit later, but let me just ask it right now. Motherhood and womanhood is often this idealized position. You know, these are the sets of virtues that you're supposed to have. This is, you know, you're naturally more spiritual. You're naturally more sensitive, and you know, we might throw in the fact that you have certain hormones that are, you know, in richer supply in your bodies than ours that make you naturally more nurturing, etc. So you've got all these things about women that are sort of there. Do you ever still hear the message? I know I heard it lots when I was younger, maybe a little bit less, but I still do. But as the priesthood, are you ever depersonalized? Are you ever put into a role like almost like this mission president you were talking about, Scott? I guess it was Amy's mission president's wife. Mm-hmm. Look at him as a priesthood holder, not as Scott Heffernan. You know, look at your spouse for what he does rather than who he is. Or, you know, if you guys caught on to where I'm going here, is priesthood sort of serving like womanhood as this idealized thing, and you're feeling a little bit less like yourselves, and you're supposed to be playing a role?
It's an interesting question. It reminds me of a diagram one of my friends put together. He said that he noticed that Mormon marriages tend to be kind of triangular, and that you have the man and the woman, and then up top you have God, and so he thinks that Mormons conceive marriage as the closer you are to God, the closer you naturally are as a husband and wife. And it's an interesting idea because then it makes it so that the focus of your relationship isn't who is this person who is my spouse? How do I interact with this person so much as it is how am I interacting with God? And the closer I am to God, I will naturally be closer to my spouse. And so I'd say that the motherhood thing and the priesthood thing are the ways that you get closer to God. So the better mother I am, the closer I am to God, and therefore, naturally, the closer I am to my husband. The better priesthood holder I am, the closer I am to God, and therefore, the closer I am to my wife.
And you're saying that's the rhetoric. You're not saying that's what you think.
No, that's the diagram that my friend put together. I personally think that it's not as helpful to think of a relationship in that way. But I tend to notice that people do say. I once wrote an article for the Sugar Bee that said, "Honey, you're always second with me." And it was about a guy who was constantly putting his wife second because he always put his wife first. And he felt like this should show her how much he loved her because he always put God first.
Right. I've heard those too. Adam or Scott, any thoughts about being depersonalized? And then, Stephen, I want to jump back to your point with a little thing from my own life.
You know, I tend to tune out those messages. My wife definitely doesn't do that to me, where she's sets me up as the priesthood holder in the home. We just kind of don't have that kind of relationship, so I don't feel that kind of pressure. And then when it's talked about in church, in elders' quorum, or whatever, as we are the priesthood, to be honest, I don't associate myself with it. Not that I don't consider myself a part of the priesthood or holding the priesthood or anything like that. But I guess I just roll my eyes a little bit when they give messages like that. And I kind of hold myself aloof or almost don't feel part of that kind of, not brotherhood, but the group of that they refer to as the priesthood. I don't quite know how to word it, but I kind of don't feel a part of that almost when they talk about it that way, just because I don't view myself that way at all.
Cool. Adam, on that, or maybe also speak to, do you think the rhetoric of the priesthood is kind of waning?
I perhaps in spots, but in general, no.
Okay.
And we tend to generalize that the men in the church are the priesthood, right? And I'm not sure if that's, I haven't thought enough about that. I can tell you that, talking about what Stephen's triangle example, I personally think that as you get closer to God, it's going to improve every aspect of your life. I don't think that for a woman, if she is a mother, then that's one of her roles, and she needs to focus on that. If a man is a priesthood holder, then that's one of his roles, he can focus on that. But they're different, and of course, and getting closer to God can only make you better in every aspect of your life. So why not your marriage as well?
Cool. Well, my wife and I taught the marriage class in our ward for about a year, so we cycled through maybe 15, 20, 30 couples through the course of the year. And it was very interesting for me to really deconstruct the manual. It was 8 lessons, and I was quite surprised, and at first I was a little bit put off, that only about 4 of the 8 lessons were actual skills. You know, how to communicate better, different things. And the other 4 truly were kind of a little bit along the lines with what you were talking about, Stephen, there. Be more Christian. Draw closer to God. Be prayerful. You know, those kinds of things, because then you're naturally going to be more forgiving, you know, of your spouses. You're going to sort of just intuit the way to help each other and stuff better. So I actually kind of started feeling better about it as we went on in that class, and as I guess I cycled through those lessons again, I found more each way, but I did find that interesting. So I think what you said there with your friend is alive and well, at least at the correlation level, because that's at least the current instant, the way the manual's currently written for the marriage class.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, well, fun. So you guys, so Scott, you just tuned it out. Stephen and Adam, you're sort of, you're not sure that it's gone down, but do you just tune it out too? And do you think women are tuning it out?
No, when you refer to the priesthood, sometimes you're automatically referring to the highest priesthood authority in that circumstance. And or it could be just even the Aaronic priesthood in certain circumstances, like sacrament meetings. We refer to the priesthood for doing the ordinance of the sacrament for us, and we're grateful for that. I went to a young women's training last year where Sister Dalton was, she was conducting, and she was kind of in charge in her presidency.
The General Relief Society, General Young Women's President.
Okay. Exactly. It was in the conference center in Salt Lake. And she had her board there. They were up on the stand too, but they have, of course they had the priesthood representatives, and I can't remember who it was. It was a, I think there was an apostle there and maybe a couple 70s, but towards the end of the meeting they were fielding questions, and a question came up that Sister Dalton didn't feel comfortable answering, and she kind of smiled and laughed, and she says, "I'm going to have the priesthood handle that question." And I thought, how interesting. And she did exactly say that, the priesthood. And she wasn't referring to the specific elder who was presiding at that meeting. He was, she just, and that situation to me said a whole lot about how we use, the multifaceted way that we use the term priesthood or the priesthood, as she deferred to him. And I wish he would have at least attempted, and then he could have stepped in and made a correction if he felt it was necessary, because I think her answer would have been just as good as his.
But would she ever feel empowered to correct him?
Yeah, that's a good point.
Hey, let me make a quick pitch though for what it is. Okay, so you said, do we sometimes feel depersonalized by being referred to as the priesthood,
or idealized? Yeah, like this,
right?
Is a...
or idealized. It was a good question. So. Yeah, in some ways it is depersonalizing, but in a way it's also sort of an empowering thing. In a lot of initiation rites, you will take on the role of someone else, of the warrior, of the mentor, of some other being who is not yourself, and in taking on that persona, you begin to experience yourself differently. You become sort of a vessel, and thoughts flow through you that wouldn't have flowed through you otherwise. And it gives you a different look on life. It empowers you to do things that you wouldn't otherwise do. It gives you a confidence that you wouldn't have otherwise. And I would submit that in many ways, that is the role of priesthood in the Mormon Church, is it allows men, and yes, only men, to be a vessel for a power that they feel is greater than themselves, and it gives them sort of a different life to be able to live, one where they can be more of a superhero, I guess. I'm not saying that to be dismissive. I'm just looking for a way to describe it. And so I think that's kind of, even though it does depersonalize, it also gives us an extra dimension that we can explore of ourselves.
Yeah, I was thinking that same thing when you mentioned the deacons getting excused, and we'd like to thank the priesthood for passing the sacrament. And yeah, that could be something that's empowering and helps them feel part of the group, and makes them feel this power that they have, this authority. And we could also talk about what that does to the young women.
The young women sitting there. Yeah,
it's a totally good question.
Yeah, as far as the men go, sure, I'm sure that can be a positive thing, definitely.
Yeah, and that leads me a bit. I mean, we're still on this topic about fatherhood, motherhood, priesthood. What about that aspect of it that says, women get their connection with the true creative powers of the universe? I mean, through their own bodies, they're in childbirth and pregnancy. For those again who are blessed with that opportunity, I don't want to leave anyone out who can't. But there's that sort of sense that. That's their connection to where the veil is thin, power and creativity is all there. And so men missing out on that benefit from priesthood. I think we'd all agree that we probably do benefit from priesthood that way, but how do you feel about that as a sort of, it seems to me like it's used as an excuse to not really ask the questions that would deconstruct stuff like that?
Yeah, so I would argue that that pairing those two, priesthood with pregnancy, I guess, the two P's, priesthood is about cultural power, and there is cultural power to reproducing and to bringing up children under a certain vision of what life is. But priesthood is definitely much more directly about having power in the culture. And so I don't think that they're very well paired at all.
Okay.
Argue with me.
Well, I would say that the true believing Latter-day Saint would say, what are you talking about, cultural power? Priesthood is the power of God. These are the powers of the universe. So in other words, you're not saying that you only think priesthood is
okay. That's
cultural,
that's
cultural
good.
Role. Okay.
Yeah. Absolutely. I am totally willing to say there is a divine aspect of priesthood. I'm totally with that. But the way that it's currently being used is that you have to have the priesthood in order to have power in the church.
Right.
The Relief Society can only get their money through the bishop. And, you know, the General Relief Society Board used to have control of its own funds, but now they can only get it through, you know, the men. So culturally, and this may be right and it may be not, I can't say, priesthood is connected absolutely with power in our particular culture, in spite of whatever divineness it has.
Good. And I definitely want to talk about patriarchy and power structures here in a minute, but Bill, go ahead and sound, you're ready to jump in, Scott, please.
I was just going to say, in all the reasons we can come up with are just ways of what we have to do to explain why the difference, why can men have priesthood and women can't. And it's somewhat dangerous territory, as we know, to try and speculate as to why a certain group doesn't have the priesthood. You know, it's... So, you know, some reasons we come up with could prove to be true, some may be false and harmful, and who knows, you know.
So, at base, the definition of priesthood is that you have been divinely called by God to serve. I mean, isn't that what the Doctrine and Covenants tells us? It's to serve. It's to be a vessel for God's hand in people's life. And at that point, I would say, you know, in a way, everybody has the priesthood. And I don't know.
It is. I mean, one of the places I always talk, you know, you talk about the power and the authority of the priesthood. And in some ways, we're talking about the authority when it comes to budgets
You're
and
right.
serving
right.
and things like that. But the power, at least, of the priesthood, at least as we're taught in Section 121, really is the ability to, you know, let virtue garnish your thoughts unceasingly, being loving, kindly, all those things. And then without compulsory means, dominion and, you know, confidence waxing strong in the presence of God. All those things theoretically should be available to women, because power in the universe, power of character, comes through a connection with God, and those kinds of traits really are what make you a powerful person, you know, in that way that we want to be powerful. So that's kind of what I'm getting at with this. There's this handling power in the real sense of it, that sort of there is this motherhood connection to that, and men end up with the authority thing. And so is there something about men that need permission to become more loving, forgiving, etc., that this priesthood confirmation, you know, hands on your head, this ritual, do you think that there is it because we're undoing cultural problems that say men have to be tough and unfeeling and, you know, living out of their head instead of living out of their hearts? Is there something good that happens there that gives us permission to dive into those areas that the Section 121 qualities would maybe be more naturally there for us?
If you go back to where it came from, if Joseph Smith had been Josephina Smith, it might be really different. We might have, it might be totally flipped on its head. We might, but I think it goes back to just, aside from the argument that it's revealed by God, given by God to men, and that's how it's supposed to be. Men have always been in this traditional position of authority, and it's just extended that way. I don't know what you guys think about that.
Yeah, I kind of just don't dare answer the question because I don't know. And we've seen what happens when we guess, and you know, I'm alluding to blacks in the priesthood, and when we come up with reasons, they're often wrong and pernicious. So I just don't know. I don't know.
Stephen, did you want to jump in?
I actually think that it's a tremendously effective construct to give people a priesthood where they need to be acting in it on a regular basis. Because, you know, when I was a teenager, I would constantly think, oh my gosh, I'm going to be blessing the sacrament in 2 days. And, you know, maybe I wouldn't do some things that I would have done. Otherwise, and it continues, and you hear the attacks that say, you've always got to be keeping yourself clean, because what if you're suddenly called on to give a blessing and you don't have time to prepare yourself for it? You've got to always be prepared. And so with this constantly in the backs of our minds, I think that it does make men think about what they're doing more often, so that they're not caught with their metaphorical pants down.
Well, good. Yeah. Again, everything we've said here is we're beneficiaries here. So I'll just say it out loud that I really want and hope that women will receive the priesthood within our tradition. I'll tell you, I've just been hanging around with these amazing women who would be incredible leaders, you know, who I absolutely would be happy to counsel with, all those sorts of things. And then I've become friends over the last few years with Susan Score, who's the apostle from one of the women, female apostles in the Community of Christ Church. And, you know, I've heard enough of her story, how she was functioning in the Community of Christ. It was back when it was the Reorganized Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and had never really thought of priesthood for herself. It hadn't been an issue for her, but she was working in church roles and sort of even formal church roles. But just to see how she blossomed and how this leadership abilities and stuff just sort of unflowed from her when she was given these opportunities, I just feel like it's incredibly sick that women in our church are never going to be encouraged formally the way we as men are to take on those things. And not everyone's going to feel called to that. And just like not every man would feel, you know, he really is called to higher priesthood within the Community of Christ. I don't know. I really hope for the day that it all equals out. But, you know, I'm not running things for sure. But it's for those reasons of just having that chance to fully blossom that sometimes feels so discouraged now. Does that make any sense?
Yep. Well said, Dan.
So you're saying that you feel like some women would have more of a chance, more of an arena to blossom in and become more themselves if they were able to function in a priesthood role in the church?
Exactly. And, you know, I look at several of my friends actually have felt like they needed to go to other traditions, and they have been ordained, and they are blossoming there. And I look at Carolyn Tanner Irish, you know, the former Episcopal bishop here and there, who was raised in a Mormon home, the daughter of O.C. Tanner, who became one of the most powerful and important leaders here in Utah in the Episcopal Church, you know. And just to say that God didn't honor a calling to priesthood for these women who are these exemplars that I'm looking at, that's just insane for me to think that could never, ever happen within our church because of these motherhood equations. And I guess I'm just saying, I just don't like that we're not asking these questions more robustly, and especially us men who are beneficiaries of, you know, these permissions to dive in and really get in touch with the powers of the universe. And
one of the things that's interesting about your question there, women ask for the priesthood, men already have the priesthood, and they're asking for women to get the priesthood. So women are asking for something that they lack within the church. And I've often wondered what would be the masculine version of a feminist who is asking for the priesthood. What is it that men are missing out in the church structure that we should be asking for? Sorry, that just came out of the blue. You don't have to answer that. Think about it, dear listeners.
I'm stumped right now.
Well, that's why it's such an easy argument to make that men get the priesthood and women have babies. And yeah, it's unfair that women can't have the priesthood, but it's unfair that men can't have babies, kind of thing. That's why people often go there.
Right. But yeah, all women don't get to have babies.
That's true. That's
a that needs to go away. That whole thing needs to go away.
I agree, by the way. I wasn't stating it as my
No, we just always have to be it's just it's crazy. This is tough stuff, listeners, and I'm sure you'll let us have it you'll let us know how tough it is and what we're missing in the comment section afterwards. But is there anything anybody else wants to talk about, this whole women in the priesthood thing? Because I really want to talk about patriarchy. I want to talk about messages about presiding in your home. I want to talk about family dynamics between husbands and wives and sort of those things that are at play in the church. So, but before we leave this other more broad stuff, anybody want to weigh in?
No, I think that'd make a great podcast, actually, to bring well-chosen men and women together to discuss that entire question, because I think it could go well beyond what we're used to hearing. You should do that sometime.
Yeah, I agree.
Cool. Anybody else want to jump in?
Nope.
No, thanks.
Okay, we've all heard of this thing called patriarchy. It seems that we all recognize that pretty much we're in a patriarchal society, which is a sort of a form of social order where men are on top. Men are looked to as the most, men seem to have the most power. Men are looked to as the most authoritative and stuff like that. And Mormonism clearly is a patriarchal tradition. We have these wonderful things called patriarchal blessings. So have prophets that we call the great patriarchs of the Old Testament. And we have this sense that men preside, they're patriarchs in their families, we're just not afraid. We don't shy away from this term the way a lot of the rest of the world has. And to me, the patriarchy that I see being deconstructed in other traditions is sort of this teasing apart of how much of it is culture and how much of it is bedrock gospel, this idea of the differences between men and women and the rhetoric, of Paul the Apostle and the other writers that have been attributed as Pauline things. How much of this is true baseline, what God wants, and how much was it inherited from the culture? And so the other traditions that seem to be wrestling with this and teasing it apart are the ones that seem to be opening up priesthood and leadership to women, and yet our church isn't. And I'm just wondering, what are the factors in Mormonism that is making that teasing apart that I think is very healthy be discouraged?
Well, it depends on your definition of healthy, I suppose, because when I think about the churches that are opening up the priesthood, their priesthoods and leadership positions to women and to minorities like homosexuals, I also realize that those are the churches that are not as powerful politically as churches that aren't opening themselves up like that. Catholicism hasn't opened itself up like that. No part of Islam, as far as I know, has opened itself up to that. I haven't heard much about Judaism being open to that, but I'm also ignorant.
Well, so, certainly Reform Judaism and Reconstruction.
Do they?
Yeah, sure. Absolutely.
Okay, good. All right. So I would say one of the first things that's standing in the way is that it seems like when these questions are broached seriously among the leadership, for some reason, I feel really ignorant even saying this, but it seems like the churches who do that lose political power. They become less united. They become more fractious. And I think that would scare the heck out of the COB. So I'd say that's the first reason why we don't go into the discussion. Is that too cynical?
It's not where I would have gone first, but
really? Oh.
what do you guys think? I feel like I'm talking way too much in this podcast. I'd rather hear from you guys, but so jump in, please, and critique Stephen.
Yeah, argue with me, because that's maybe I'll just retract that. I don't know.
Well, it seems to be it's an observation that can be made after
the
fact, but to be thinking that the church leaders up there, wow, we've got some political clout and we'd lose it, I don't see that that would be probably on the discussion table. I don't know.
I think it would maybe be the hidden curriculum, the hidden discussion. I don't think they'd want to say it aloud, but the Mormons do have political power. And I think looking at the Community of Christ, they did lose a lot of their members when they opened up the priesthood, and they lost a lot of their clout when it happened.
I think it's interesting. I think another reason that could be is just because we've chosen that term from the beginning, and so we've got to kind of stick to it. You know, our rhetoric on patriarchy has lessened a lot over the years, and, you know, whereas church talks or Ensign articles used to just come out and say, yeah, it's a patriarchy and men preside and they're the leaders. Now we still use those terms of patriarchy and men preside, but then we also throw in terms of, but men and women are equal and there's equality in a marriage and things like that. So they kind of just say both now. And there's an interesting tension going on, and people are trying to figure out what it means to be a patriarch and what it means to preside if we're equal with our wives.
Yeah, and I want you to talk about the very interesting, you know, blog discussions and firestorm that was on Modern Mormon Men, but let's not quite do that yet, Scott. But,
okay.
But you definitely have a great example of how that discussion can go. Is there something about our view of priesthood that doesn't let us do it? Or is there something about Mormonism that just says there is no deconstructing to do? Everything in the New Testament and its culture is just fine with us. That truly is God's way. Where other traditions are saying, come on, let's look at this differently. Why aren't we deconstructing it? What else could it be besides political clout?
Dan, I like what Stephen said, and I think he's right, that those major religions, Catholicism and Islam, there isn't a separation. But what you brought up, the examples that you brought up with Susan Scorer and Carolyn Tanner Irish, those are smaller faiths, right? Smaller churches, and maybe they're pushing, they're more willing to push the envelope because they have a smaller structure that they're dealing with. I remember President Kimball, when someone asked him, you know, will women ever get the priesthood? And he said, not in my lifetime. And at the time, all of us thought, well, wow, what a clever response, because it was a question that was asked by a reporter, and it was like the perfect response. It was almost like a response that Christ would have given, you know, kind of enigmatic, and yet, but also perhaps opening the door. But all of us really would say, no, of course he doesn't mean that women are ever going to get the priesthood. He was just giving a clever answer to a reporter. I think the structure right now in the foreseeable future for the LDS Church is really not even to consider it. And I think you see that in conference addresses, recent ones, where I can't remember who it was that said, or maybe it was a press release where someone in PR says our women aren't requesting it. They're not asking for it.
Right.
You know, have you heard that? I think I'm pretty sure that's been in the last couple of years where that response was given.
Oh, absolutely. And we actually had a podcast with Christine Haglund, Jana Reese, and Joanna Brooks, where they were responding to something Michael Otterson said in the Washington Post about ask our women, they're happy, they're content. There's no, it was sort of that idea of no one's That's clamoring perfect. For it, so it's a yeah. it's a non-question. But yeah, I guess I'm still not. Why? I don't know. Does anybody have any I have my own speculation. Okay, let me just throw it out there. We view priesthood quite differently than I think most ever the churches, than perhaps Catholicism and something else. In other words, that it's this something or other that's conveyed, that's sort of conferred, that we're really following God's rules for it, versus a lot of traditions, and especially in the Protestant stuff, this idea of a priesthood of all believers, that access to God is purely unmediated by, you know, popes and priests and all those different things. And so I think in some ways, my speculation is that it might be easier for many of those traditions to say, women, step up, you're claiming your gifts, you know, welcome, you know, to it, fully flourish, go forth. Whereas maybe us and the Catholics, who one of you mentioned was, are probably not moving forward on this as quickly as others. And but I'm just wondering if it's because we view priesthood as ours not to step in and claim, but only ours to get when somebody with priesthood authority says, it is time to do this activity, this action that confers it. Is that possibly why we're just, until God tells us, we're not willing to ask that question because it's not really coming up for us with that view of priesthood? Does that make any sense?
It's an interesting idea. It makes me remember when I gave my son the priesthood, and it was a special experience for me. I really enjoyed doing it, and I felt a deep connection to him. And similarly, when my dad gave me the Melchizedek priesthood, I felt very much a sense of connection, as if something were flowing in my veins and in my bones, in my spirit, that hadn't been there before. It was, as you say, something that was sort of passed down. And it was important to me to think I can trace this priesthood, as if, you know, getting a relic from Elvis Presley's sequined suit or something like that. This came from the real deal type of thing. And I really value that connection. It makes me feel like I'm part of something big. And I value it for that, but that definitely brings up the question, wouldn't I like to feel that same kind of connection with my daughter? Wouldn't I like to feel that same kind of connection with my mom? So one of the things that comes to...
Wouldn't it be cool for you and your wife to both bless your sons and your daughters and share this?
Yeah, what would that do to a marriage? That's a really interesting idea. What would that do to a marriage, to feel like you needed to sort of do a Wonder Twin powers activate type of thing in order to bring through a very special priesthood together? I suppose there might be something in Mormonism like that, but wouldn't it be interesting to have something sort of official, have something of a discourse where the mother and the father have a combined priesthood that is noticed and talked about and used in particular circumstances? That would be really interesting.
Do any of you know anything about the Quorum of the Anointed back in Nauvoo? And it seemed like that might have been something Joseph Smith was playing with. Didn't last, you know, past his
Tell
death much.
It.
Well, I don't really remember it. I just remember that it was couples that were in this highest quorum. It was the Quorum of the Anointed, and they held the priesthood together. And I don't know what would have flowed from that, but it seemed like that's within the tradition. And we certainly have plenty of examples of... Have you guys heard these, where the prophet will be getting a blessing and he'll ask his wife to step in the circle with the man...
That.
Yeah, there's been examples of that. I'm sure that our listeners can help provide that. women certainly have given blessings. It seems like the priesthood works great, or at least all the things that we say are manifested through the priesthood work just fine before you know, the structural changes or somebody said no, no, no to that. So I'm just looking for, I can't think of any good reason for not asking these questions again.
Dan, I can tell you in my family, my extended family, there's an instance of a mother feeling inspired at the time to give her son a blessing and actually laid her hands on his head, gave him a blessing. I don't know by what authority she chose to do that. Probably just because, just by virtue of being his mother. I don't know.
Even Orson Scott Card had Ender's mother sneak into his room before he goes off to battle school, and she gave him a good blessing. I mean, yeah, I don't know if it's Melchizedek priesthood and all that stuff either, but uber conservative Scott Card.
Yeah, this actually happened with a boy who was going back on a mission, and when he got to the MTC, he was talking to the MTC president, and he told him this experience. And the MTC president said, your mother was inspired to do that and did not take away from that experience. And I thought that was really cool.
That's awesome.
Cool. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, so we're going in places I didn't want to do. Now, Stephen, you had one thought that you've shared, at least to tease in some of our pre-conversation, about why you think patriarchy is going to be hard to shake, maybe perhaps in Mormonism, than it would in others. And this is another one of your out-there ideas. But I think it has some merit, so I think it's worth throwing out there, if you don't mind.
All right. This is, as Dan said, an out-there idea. I think that patriarchy is kind of here to stay, at least for the next 100 years, because Mormons have kind of an apocalyptic mentality. We have this feeling, and I admit that I have it as well, that the world isn't for much longer. That we have this legend that one day the Constitution will be hanging by a thread, and the elders of Israel shall rise up and save it. And we have we're constantly amassing our food storage in anticipation of disasters. We have a teaching that eventually the saints are going to be called back to Missouri, and when we get there, there will not be a yellow dog to wag its tail at us. And so whenever we think about the future, we're always thinking about chaos, war, and as far as we know, we're going to have to step up quickly and take charge, whether it's to save the Constitution or whether it's to gather all the saints and hoof it back to Missouri or something like that. And the thing is, when you enter into a survival situation like that, where there's very few goods that can go around, where there isn't a big multinational network that can keep your Walmarts going and stuff like that, you need an efficient social structure that will get you to the places that you need to go with as little conflict as possible. So when we had the wagon trains moving west, it was the men who were in charge, because it was easy to see who was in charge. You looked for the beard. You said, oh, the bigger the beard, the more he's in charge.
Oh, man.
And so it seems to me that we have this feeling of impending doom, and we're worried that if we start to blur the lines of authority, that when those disasters come, we're not going to be ready, because we're going to say, well, who's in charge? What's going to happen? And we won't know what to do. People won't have their roles that they can fall into easily and anymore. We'll have to spend all this time getting things together, when if we just stick with the plan, man. And so patriarchy is that plan. And it worked getting us across the plains.
Why did you put a 100-year limit on this? Is this for more generations to die out before these ideas of going to Missouri and stuff die out? Or where was that 100 years coming from for you?
That was just me saying something, I think. Mostly I'm just worried that the Tea Party is going to destroy everything. And if the Tea Party can get destroyed in the next 100 years, then we'll be okay. I'm kidding. It's those Occupy Wall Streeters that have me worried.
Oh, man, too funny. Either of you guys want to weigh in on Stephen's speculation, or should we just leave it out there as... I agree. There's something to it, Stephen. I'm sure that's there hanging in the background.
Yeah,
to some degree.
Something that's never crossed my mind, but it's a fun thought, definitely.
They won't let me preach in an elders' quorum. I don't know why.
Why aren't we deconstructing patriarchy, guys? That would be a good topic for elders' quorum. Yeah, probably not too often. Adam, any thought on that before I do want to throw it to Scott with the whole benevolent patriarchy or the way you preside in your home in righteousness kind of stuff. But anything else on just the general question of deconstructing patriarchy?
Well, in spite of there being examples of prophetesses in the scriptures, the priesthood has always come through male figures. And I just don't see that getting washed out of the church anytime soon. I mean, 100 years might be generous even, Stephen, I don't know. Or and at least when you talk about organization, you know, maybe, Stephen, on a global scale, the people would look to male figures, but I know at the local level, a lot more good happens typically through the visiting teaching program than through home teaching.
You're right about that.
Yeah, and there are times when, you know, the visiting teachers will want to call in the priesthood because they need some strong backs, but a lot of times they go and make things happen themselves. In my experience with the Relief Society presidents that I've worked with, they are so capable, and they get things done, and I think on the local level it's usually the sisters that are getting things done on a very basic level.
Cool. I'm excited about all this. So, you know, we're kind of at the theoretical level here, and it's time to bring it down. We've got about 30-40 minutes before I definitely want us to end our conversation today. And so, Scott, one of the things that I was aware of, but you've agreed to kind of lay out for us, is there was quite a firestorm on the Modern Mormon Men blog over a fellow who was saying, you know, I'm aware of these issues about patriarchy and presiding in my home, but here's the way I'm trying to do it righteously. Here's my benevolent patriarchy and the way we're doing it here. And it raised, 250 comments, and other blogs were coming over and doing stuff. So would you mind framing sort of this episode in the Modern Mormon Men blog, and it'll open up some good questions for us?
Sure, you bet. So it was interesting. We had a post kind of in the queue that was from a guest poster, and it was the reluctant patriarch. And so he kind of talked about how he's not super into patriarchy, but his wife wants him to be a patriarch. But so one of our regular contributors saw that and decided to do a post on kind of in support of patriarchy, or, you know, how he reconciles kind of the view of the world of patriarchy and the church's view of patriarchy. So St. Mark put together a post called A Modern Patriarch, where he kind of laid out what it means to be a modern patriarch and how, you know, traditionally maybe this idea of patriarchy has been negative and it's been abused. And, you know, he kind of defines it by the dictionary and saying it's rule by men. And he says, I don't accept that definition. I think we do it different in the church, and kind of same with presiding. It's not the preside as the world defines preside and things like that. So, you know, but he comes around and says, is there such thing as righteous patriarchy or righteous dominion? And he says, yes, there is. There absolutely is. It's in the family proclamation that men are the patriarchs and preside in the home. And of course, we do that in love and righteousness and service. And, you know, we consult with our wives and, you know, consult with our children and things like that. But at the end of the day, it's patriarchy. And that's the way the Lord has spelled it out. So that was his post. And it created quite the controversy on Modern Mormon Men. It actually, on our blog, it got about 60 comments, which isn't you know, which is a good amount. But a woman named Amelia, who blogs for The Exponent, who was kind of going back and forth with St. Mark in the comments, decided to do a post on it. Her post is called On the Sexist Nature of Benevolent Patriarchy. And so she did a response post, and over there it got, you know, like 230.
Okay, comments. That's what it was.
Yeah. And our blog is kind of often less intellectual than a lot of the blogs on the Blogger Network. We have a lot of things on like pop culture and things like that. So we don't generally get a ton of arguing ins and outs of doctrine and things like that. So it was fun, and we've had other posts, you know, that have been controversial and things like that. But that one definitely kicked off something that was very strong reactions.
Yeah, would you mind if you're ready? Otherwise, the other of us who've read her response too. What was Amelia's major reactions? I mean, I'm at least remembering one that was totally all over her blog or her response. Can you articulate it, or should...
Maybe you can kind of jump in. But she, in the comments, she was just like, "This is weird because I'm actually having like a physical sick reaction to your post." And like, I was trying to give it a, she was like, "I like the Modern Mormon Men blog, so I was trying to give this post a chance," and just got far enough along where I just could not stomach it.
And she said that I'm sort of steeled myself to hear this stuff in church, but on a blog I it's really given me the physical reaction. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is interesting because, you know, I didn't agree, with everything in St. Mark's post by any means, but he wasn't saying anything out of the ordinary that you would hear at church, you know, right. But, it's something, I don't know if it's just something we're not used to in the Blogger Knuckle, cause there's a more liberal slant. But yeah, strong reactions. And her response post was very well done. She's very intelligent and basically pointed out the way that patriarchy is structured. It's, you know, women are to men as children are to parents. And so, exactly. You know, under patriarchy, women are expected to take on this, it's like a child role to the husband. She's the child, you know, as the husband hearkens to the word of the Lord, the woman hearkens to the word of the husband kind of thing. And so she lays that out really nicely, and just, you know, kind of defines and gives no room for wiggle room on some of the things. And, you know, the kind of the main point is, look, you can't have equality in patriarchy. You can try and call it that. But the fact of the matter is patriarchy is, you know, rule by men, and there's unequal. And so it's a struggle for modern Latter-day Saints to reconcile the two areas of patriarchy and equality. And that's what St. Mark was attempting to do and say, look, I consult with my wife, and sometimes she makes decisions and sometimes I make decisions. And then people in the comments were like, well, we're going to hold you to that. And then, so why is it patriarchy when you make a decision, but not, you know, not that when she makes the decision? What's the difference if you have this equal relationship? Then what's the patriarch about it? How do you, you know? So it's there's definitely tension in the church around these terms, and it was fascinating to see it play out on the blog. Are there areas that I missed, Dan, that you wanted to?
No, I mean, obviously it was the women are to men and children are to their parents thing was definitely what she does, and she uses St. Mark's own, you know, sentence or paragraph structure and kind of charts it out in two columns and all that to show that his own words betray total lack of equality and whatnot. And so what is it? She called it the sexist nature of even benevolent patriarchy or something like
that.
Yeah,
on the sexist nature of benevolent patriarchy. Yeah.
So guys, is patriarchy all, is there any escape from this? Is there any benevolent patriarchy? Is there a way that you're encouraged to run your homes now, or not run them? Hello, right there. Is there anything in the rhetoric that, are we ever going to escape this critique that if man is to preside in the home, if there's any of that language there, that it'll ever truly be an equal partnership?
I wonder if we're just kind of trapped, us guys in the church, because we just can't get out of it. Even if we want to be completely equal in our parenting efforts and our decision making, somebody's always going to look at us and say, well, just because you have the priesthood and the church says you preside, then I'm going to have bad feelings against you. Or just in general, I had a conversation with my wife before for this recording, and I said, we never really even talked about it. I said, do we kind of do this together? I mean, we've been married for 20 years. How do we do it? And she says, yeah, we do it all together, you know? And I don't think she looks at me as someone who's overbearing, and I don't look at her that way. So I know there's this feeling out there. I haven't read through the entire entry on the Exponent about this reaction to quote unquote benevolent patriarchy, but I feel a little bit trapped by it. Does anybody else feel that way?
Stephen, any thoughts on what Adam just said, or just the reaction to the stuff that Scott described?
Adam, I agree with you. There is a feeling of trappedness. And the reason I think why we feel that way is simply because we don't have a third word. We have patriarchy and we have matriarchy, but we don't have a third word. At least I don't. Maybe there is one to describe how it is when the sexes work together in an equal way. I think I can see the church reaching toward that ideal in the proclamation on the family, because it talks about men and husband and wife working equally together. But it's still, you know, the man presides type of thing. We just don't have a discourse at the moment to be able to talk about what it would be to say, no, we aren't a matriarchy, we aren't a patriarchy, we're a,
yeah, you know,
I don't know, what would you call it?
Where are the examples? You know, it's easy to point to an example, and I'm trying to think of an example.
Supposedly we have heavenly parents.
It's true, we do.
Why can't we mine that for all it's worth and say everything is the divine couple, instead of just always concentrating on the father? So I don't know. It seems like we have a resource there. I think this Quorum of the Anointed, I think Joseph Smith had some insights and some things to do there. We have the language of priestesses and goddesses, both in Section 132 and certainly in the temple ceremony. I don't know. I think there's room to be able to do it, Steve. I don't know what the word would be. You know, the hieroskamos is the divine marriage, the union of male and female, and we get that sort of in a lot of the mystical literature out there. But I think we could certainly do more. So I think there is a way out. But until then, are we sort of just stuck with like what Adam and his wife are doing and what others are doing here of just, like you do, Scott, you say, I don't go there with priesthood. You probably don't go there in your head thinking that the preside stuff is really all that relevant to your life. Am I guessing right?
Yeah, that's correct. But I think you guys are right. I think we're missing models. We don't know. We have the two models of the patriarch, the kind of overbearing, or we have kind of the over womanized man that's kind of apologizing and always just wanting to please, and we kind of can jump back and forth, or we don't have kind of role models of what a man should be, and so it's everyone's trying to figure it out, I think, right now, and hopefully we'll start to see some models emerge.
Well, good. This may lead us towards something about Stephen and the stay-at-home dad thing, and I know that there's the equal parenting model that Chelsea Shields Strayer in our motherhood one really emphasized that she and her husband are deliberately doing, and they are having to face some questions in the quorums, in the wards, and those who watch them, but they're sort of carving out a way that maybe, I don't know, Stephen, would you say with you and at least the other stay-at-home dads that you've been interacting with, is there some sort of, now that we're getting more familiar with these alternate models, we're defanging it, we're taking some of the scare factor away from it? Is that the way we're going to change this?
Well, yeah, it essentially, like Scott said, I think there's starting to be more models to look at. Noelle and I had had a nice little story about meeting in high school, becoming high school sweethearts. I went off on my mission. She waited for me. She got her bachelor's degree while I was gone. I came home. We got married, and then we started having kids. And while we were in that area, we had a story to follow. It was one that our culture gave to us, and it felt good to follow it because we felt like we were going in the right direction. And we kept that going until I finished with my bachelor's degree. And then a funny thing happened. The story sort of started to fall out from under us. We were saying, where do we go next? What do we do? And the only thing we could really come up with was to buy a house, which was insanely stupid. I was a newspaper reporter. I made $20,000 a year, and we didn't have enough money to pay for this house. I had this $500 credit card bill that would not go away, and it was $500, and I couldn't take care of it. But we were flailing. We were looking for a story to follow. So eventually what we did was we said, hey, we could go to graduate school. And so we moved up to Alaska and we went to graduate school. We got our MFAs and that led into our PhDs. And it was a really good time for us to sort of start to hammer out a new story, because I grew up in a family where my dad was an incredibly brilliant computer scientist. And he was constantly gone doing his work, bringing home good money. And my mom was home taking care of the kids. I had no idea what it was like to have a family in any other way than that. But we were put in a position where we were both going to classes at the same time, and we had to figure out how to parent our children. And amazingly enough, we put together a schedule where we were almost always, one of us was always at home with our children. And it gave us a good 5 years to start to learn, me learning the things that are normally done by the housewife and her doing things that are normally done by the working husband. And so, geez, where was I going?
Well, no, that's great story, and now feeding into you're actually modeling a different story than what you'd probably ever conceived of.
Certainly, but it took a lot of work. And it's interesting because it's launched us into where we are now, which is a story that I'm still kind of struggling with, because what happened was we were both working for a school, and I got offered the Sunstone editorship, and Noelle got pregnant just when I got the job, and I was able to work at home, and so it was perfect. I could take care of the baby, and I must admit, these have been the 2.5 greatest years of my life. I love this little girl, and I wouldn't trade the time that we've had together for anything. But then Noelle got this really excellent job as an educational software designer, and she is flourishing there. It's perfect for her. But now I'm in this town called Orem, where all the men are at work and all the women are at home, and I am so lonely. There are no men around, and I can't go on play dates because the women are suspicious of me. I don't know why. It's probably because they were brought up to know that the men are constantly thinking about having sex with them.
That is another podcast that we will be having. I promise that one.
But this story, I was not prepared in the least for this story. I don't know what to do next. I don't know where my identity is coming from, except as parents to these children. And the funny thing is, I'm doing my best. There is a root of patriarchy in me that is so deep inside me that despite all the women's studies classes that I've taken, despite all of my education, I still think all I'm doing is raising these kids. What am I doing with my life? So there is still a part of me deep down that doesn't value the raising of children as much as it values going out and making a living. This is a defect.
Well, but you still are making a pretty decent living. Sunstone's not a poverty position, and you are creating something important each every 2 months.
And also that it's very difficult to find anybody who thinks that what I'm doing is anything but weird. Joseph West in that issue of the magazine you were talking about talks about socially paralyzing people, and I'm constantly doing that. They say, what are you doing during the day? And I say, oh, I'm tending my children, and they have no idea what to say. For example, my home teacher came over. And he says, "So, how's work going?" And I said, "Well, I'm editing a series of articles on stay-at-home fathers." And he laughed. And that was the end of that conversation. There was just no way for me to have any sort of interaction with him on that. And yeah, and the women think I'm weird. So
okay, so Stephen, you're in Happy Valley, Utah, so that might be tougher. Adam, Scott, are you seeing alternate models starting to at least become more acceptable?
Well, we have, you and I have a shared acquaintance, our friend Dan, who does all the cooking in his home. He's the man of the house. He does all the cooking. His wife doesn't prefer it, you know, and that's fine with me. I like to cook too. I'm just not home to do it. So, that's a minor example. What Stephen is talking about is major, and that would be a tough situation. I mean, especially being in Orem, Utah, where exactly, you know, we're taught in the church that, you know, a man and a woman are not supposed to be together. You're not even allowed to give a woman a ride home from church. You know, you're not supposed to be alone together. There are exceptions, of course, like when a bishop's doing interviews or working with the Relief Society president or something like that. But in general, you're supposed to be, you know, apart. And so Stephen trying to interact with people, I mean, I don't know, are there any other stay-at-home dads in your ward at all, Stephen?
No, there aren't.
Yeah.
Was it hard to find guys for that panel that you put together?
It was. I had to do a lot of networking to find them.
Hmm. Interesting. Scott, do you have any experience with that or seeing defanged?
I want to say I can feel your pain a little bit, Stephen. Or at least I got a taste of it when I took some time off. I basically was unemployed for 3 months shortly after my son was born. When he was born, I only took 2 weeks off, and I was sad to only take 2 weeks off. I was working a contract position, and I ended up working there for 2 years, but there was a space of about 3 months where I wasn't working there. And I'm into art, and so I'll go to places like little craft stores that, you know, go to Michael's
awesome.
Yeah, those were fun times, just to look around and everyone is giving you weird looks and it's just all women in the Michael's craft store. I also wanted to say that I highly, highly recommend taking an extended period of time off, especially when your firstborn is born. You know, when our son was first born, I took 2 weeks and it was fun, and then I went back to work, and my wife was figuring out parenting all by herself. And then when I was out of work for 3 months, we were figuring things out together. And that really was important, because, you know, what happens is the wife takes care of business and she takes care of the kids. And then if the dad ever has to do it, he kind of doesn't know what he's doing sometimes. And that's where that bumbling dad stereotype can come from, is, you know, well, the mom's been doing this for so long. This was talked about a little bit in the Motherhood post. Or a podcast, that, you know, she has her way of doing things, and then the dad really doesn't know what he's doing. But if you're kind of both together in the beginning, just figuring it out with the first one, and you're kind of figuring out the parenting styles, that was really one of the greatest blessings I've had, to be unemployed for that 3 months. I also wanted to say, and I kind of alluded to this earlier, that I would love to have a system in our family. My wife and I's goal is to both work part-time. And like I was saying, the current kind of structure with, you know, working full-time and getting benefits and pay rates and things like that aren't really set up to do that. But we have the goal, and it could work out to where, you know, we both parent. Our kids might be in daycare for a day or two a week, but then we both, you know, get time with them. We both get time away from them, which I also think is important, to work and kind of go explore and, you know, be independent and things like that. So I'm hoping that that's going to work with the job I'm in now. It's full-time right now, but it could go down to 4 days a week and still keep my benefits. So anyway, I think that's one thing that we're striving for, at least. And then on the subject of new models, something popped into my head. Someone shared on Facebook the commercial with the Tide dad, stay-at-home dad. Have you guys seen that?
No.
It's this guy, and he's saying, hey, I'm a stay-at-home dad, and I rule at doing the laundry. You know, it's a Tide commercial. So he's saying, I rule at doing the laundry, and look at me fold this dress and things. And his daughter comes up at the end and says, can you braid my hair? And he's like, sure, what kind of braid do you want? And I think it's kind of cheesy, but it's actually this really strong new model of this dad who's not bumbling, but he's and he knows what he's doing parenting, but not in a womanly way. He's really owning his parenting in a manly way. He's, you know, in a traditional manly way, a somewhat masculine way, where he's kind of has his stuff together, you know, and he's just like, yeah, I totally do this, and I'm a man. And, you know, it's kind of a powerful model to see that, you know, I don't think that men have to try and be like women, and we don't have to try and parent exactly like our wife would parent, or, you know, something like that. We can own it in our own way. And I think, you know, as we're seeing with people like Steven and things like that, we are seeing that model emerge. So it gives me hope. That's all.
I'm looking forward to the day when Apostle gets up in general conference and talks about how great his stay-at-home dad was at teaching him the gospel.
Awesome. Yeah, I think it's like anything else. The more that we see it, and it's going to take pioneers, and it's going to take people who just simply say, this is what God told us to do. You know, we didn't undertake this particular structure lightly or whatever, or maybe it did happen by accident, but this is truly how our family works best. Deal with it, you know, not to say that in a rude way, but to simply put it out there in front of people, and I think things can change. And so I do highly recommend finding that section of the motherhood one where Chelsea was talking about how she and her husband do equal parenting and how they've worked with it and how certain rough edges are being knocked off as far as other people and their reactions to them as well. So hopeful that something good can happen. All right, guys, Stephen, let me ask you something. You've mentioned that you don't know that there's cultural stories that really talk about couples not falling into gender roles. Do you still want to bring that up, or was your extended conversation about you and Noelle not having a story, was that part of that?
Well, actually, W. Somerset Maugham wrote something really interesting on the first page of The Rager's Edge, which is one of his most popular books. He says, when male and female, after whatever vicissitudes you like, are at last brought together, they have fulfilled their biological function, and interest passes to the generation that is to come. And when you think about all of the stories of male-female relationships that we take in popular culture through movies, through books, and things like that, the story does always seem to end when the male and the female get together, unless it's about the male and the female splitting up. And I realized that we have next to zero stories where the marriage is the main character, where we follow the man and the woman as they make a marriage. Where are our stories? Where are our models about interesting marriages, where things interesting happen because the man and the woman came together, not because the man and the woman took their separate roles, not because the man became a great BYU professor or a great church leader, and not because the woman raised 9 children to all become high-powered lawyers? Where are stories where the man and the woman complement each other, the Wonder Twin powers activate, like I was talking about before? Where are those stories? Because I think that if we started a discourse, a bunch of narratives, a bunch of stories that showed what happens when men and women get together and complement each other, not because they take on different roles, but because their particular strengths, they learn how to use their particular strengths to make something unique, something new between them, not just children. And I actually think that Mormons should be on the forefront of being able to do that, because we have this doctrine of eternal marriage. And I would hope that our eternal marriages aren't just for procreation and not just for governing worlds, but that more than that happens between the husband and wife. In fact, going through this podcast made me realize what it is if women are asking the church for the priesthood. What I'd like to ask for is a public joint priesthood with my wife, so that we can make something new between us. What happens when the powers of men and women come together, undivided by gender roles? I think there's lots of possibilities there, but we don't have any stories to help us with that.
Can anybody think of any that either scriptural or indefinitely in the Mormon, canon of faith-promoting stories that would serve the role that Stephen's looking at? Nothing's coming to my mind.
But. Well, just the whole Adam Eve story, where a man leaving his father and mother and shall cleave unto his wife, and they shall be one flesh. Where are the stories about the one flesh?
Exactly. Right? I want to hear them. This is where I think Mormons could do a marvelous work and a wonder, is to explore what marriage could be if the man or the woman are together doing things together instead of separating. Very cool. I got off my soapbox. I'm done.
No, that was awesome. Okay, there's one more thing on my notes, you guys. Scott, did you have anything to jump in with?
No, that was great.
Okay. One more thing in my notes, and I know I shared them with you guys ahead of time, and it's basically emerged from the last, well, two podcasts ago, where we revisited young single adult, experiences within the church, and we had a wonderful panelist named Kayla Sigmiller, and she shared the rhetoric that she hears about men in the church is pretty much all negative. And so I wanted to get our experiences with it. For her, it was like, okay, men only think about sex. They can't control themselves when a woman is at all provocative or, whatever. So why would I want to unite myself with somebody who's that shallow? Or, all this warnings about porn addiction makes her sort of think, because she doesn't have a whole lot of experience with men in general or Mormon men in particular, she thinks that we're all porn addicts that can't control ourselves. Or there's all the messages that we don't step up and ask women out on dates. We're not stepping up to the plate. We're a menace to the church if we're unmarried by whatever the date was that Brigham Young did, and we all kind of laugh about it when we hear it in talks, but it comes up often enough that we're falling apart, or all we want to do is play video games and hang with each other, and we're a bunch of bromance seekers rather than romance seekers. So these messages, she says these are what she's hearing about, and she's not hearing any positive messages about men. And it seemed like in the blog comments for that podcast, a lot of men are saying, yes, I'm hearing that too. I'm not, for all the ways that the church and patriarchy and priesthood benefit me, I'm not hearing a whole lot of stuff that tells me, the positive stuff about myself. So what do you guys think? Is that a trend that you're noticing too? You're not getting a whole lot of positive reinforcement about what good you are?
Well, in preparation for a lesson that I did recently, I went to BYU's corpus of general conference talks. And you can do a search on any word going back to the 1850s, and it's quite interesting. And the word pornography peaked in 2005, 2006. It was mentioned in one conference 45 times. So,
wow.
So over 45 times. And so if the sisters catch wind of that and they start believing that their men are porn addicts or having trouble with it, thankfully it has come down. That was the peak, and it has come down to where in this most recent conference, there was only one mention of the word pornographic at all, and that was during a priesthood session, Elder Holland's talk. Just one mention. And so, thankfully, that was very refreshing that it wasn't brought up as much. But what other message are the sisters going to get if they go read conference issue and see it brought up that many times, it's almost like a guaranteed thing that they're going to come away with that impression.
Yeah, my wife went to an institute class while we were living in Alaska, and the institute teacher there said, with all sincerity, looking at the college age girls who were there, "You must help the boys. You only have one devil assigned to you. They have 20.
Oh my!
He said it in all earnestness.
Interesting. Oh man. Yeah. So that is actually another one, that women are naturally more righteous. Or
yeah, one area that she touched on as well was, she said, you know, there's two extremes. There's either the porn addict, or there's, you know, someone that's never looked at porn or never looks at porn, and that's it. There's no, that's the rush.
They're not taught that there could be a scale of occasionally having been exposed to a Playboy magazine, right, a couple times in your life.
If ever looked at porn, they're scum, you know, and they're, you know, so that was an interesting thing to be brought up, and kind of a predicament that most men are in. The other impact I think that this has, my wife and I have talked about this. So young men growing up get the masturbation talk from, you know, from the bishop or from in young men's or whatever. We get the don't do it, right? It's gross and you're not supposed to do it and things like that. The women really don't get it. And it's actually harmful in the way that the girls know that the boys are getting the don't masturbate talk, and they know that it's bad and evil, and you know, I'm you know, saying the rhetoric here, but that it's, you know, it's perverse and things like that. And so the girls, if they experiment with it or anything, they just get the message that they are more than perverse. Like, if the boys are doing this and they're perverse for doing it, and we're not even getting talked to about it, I must be really gross, because I'm doing this thing that not even the boys are supposed to be doing, and I'm doing it. And so I think it's kind of harmful to, and it kind of plays out right in that area, in the, you know, men are bad and they're doing these bad things, but women aren't, you know. So when the women are doing things that, you know, the sins or whatever, the guilt and shame is worse in my opinion. So
interesting. Yeah. Huh. Adam, any thoughts on that? I have one more angle on this to go after.
You mentioned a whole bunch of things, Dan, about, and I was trying to remember some of the specifics when you asked that question, when you're framing it. I just remember, just in the media and in advertisements, that the white male has been getting a bad rap a little bit. You know, the kids are cooler than he is. He needs them to figure out his cell phone and so on. Hopefully that tide is turning, but you're right. I think it does happen. That's the only thing that I've really noticed. In general, I think in the church, we still esteem manhood and womanhood appropriately, as we should. There are, I don't know, discipline wise, I couldn't speculate if men mess up more than women do, but hopefully if that's the case, if there is a negative perception, then hopefully it's getting fixed one way or another, hopefully through the church's efforts.
So you guys are not sitting here thinking, man, nobody's really telling me how well I'm doing. It's all, I mean, for me, one thing occurred to me that I didn't mention in my little litany there was, you know, you're failing as home teachers. You know, it seems like very few men are doing it, and so we're constantly getting, do better, do better, do better. And are we ever hearing positive messages about, you know, look at the transformation of your souls, that we're seeing spiritual growth here, and, you know, and as are we ever getting those messages? Well, first of all, are women getting them too? But I'm just wondering if there's, are you guys feeling like we're getting built up the way that somebody who is a child of God should be built up, and leave the question about whether or not women are?
I would say very rarely do I get that message.
So it's always, you're falling short, you can always do better, here's a higher goal.
I would say mostly, yeah.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Yeah, that's definitely what's going on. The interesting thing is that when those things are held out to us, you should be doing this better, you should be doing this better, it's always for things that have already been predefined and already taught to us. They're never saying, well, gee whiz, guys, we've got this problem or we have this situation and we're not sure what to do about it. We need to do a little creative thinking here. That never happens in church. We're never creating something. I mean, I think that's why a lot of people say, wouldn't it have been rad to be back with Joseph Smith? Because they were making the stuff then, and now we just regurgitated. So maybe that's one of the things. It's just we're lacking the imagination. We're lacking the canvas on which we can renew the vision of Mormonism. Instead, it's always, well, what do you got to do, guys? Read your scripture, say your prayers, go to church, do your home teaching. Rock on!
No, that's a good thing. And that might be a good place to actually end the podcast here, because it sort of, I think, sums up a little bit what this 2 hours has been. We're right at the top limit of however long I like to go on these podcasts. So if you guys are right, kind of do a summary. What I think we've done well here is we've had a conversation that sort of touched on 5, 6, 7 good areas, but did anybody feel like we solved anything? I don't think like we came down and says, wow, here is clarity of the way, other than I think we came close perhaps in some of that idea of imagining couple priesthood, or you know, what these new things would be, what Stephen just talked about there about, you know, really getting together and having brainstorms versus here's the program, get with it, quit falling short. I don't know, so I just hope that we all feel good about this podcast, because I feel like we're seeding the questions, we're not answering the questions here. Does that make any sense? Did anybody feel like we did more answering than I've shared there?
No, we failed.
What?
We failed.
Well, and that's, it just dawned on me as I said that. Am I saying, oh no, here's another dang thing that we didn't do? In some ways, I loved your word, Adam, we're trapped. You know, because here we are, four guys who have all the benefits of the patriarchy, and we have these institutionalized ways to dive in and to become these spiritual beings and to lead and to do the quote unquote, you know, dramatic work or whatever you use, Stephen, as, you know, doing the big life stuff versus the more intimate, you know, family stuff. So here we are doing that. But in some ways, I hope we conveyed a little bit that it's not easy being us, just as it's difficult.
Well, yeah, I think we've brought up a lot of good food for thought. I think the basic theme of the podcast has been, how can we get out of the boundaries of thought that aren't working for us? How can we find the third word? Yeah, matriarchy, patriarchy, couplearchy. I don't know what it is. How can we reimagine our Mormonism so that it resonates more with what we experience?
Cool. Scott or Adam?
Well, sure. Yeah, I'll just kind of, I guess, end on a positive note, try and say, I think a big part of the problem is fear. And I think we're very reactive as people. And I think we're here on the earth to act and not be acted upon. And not to react to every little thing, but to be proactive. And so there's kind of this model of fear versus confidence. And with our manhood or our fatherhood or whatever, us being priesthood holders, we're often acting out of fear, it feels like. And so we're reacting to different influences. And I think if we're just true to ourselves and we kind of own our manhood and not feel threatened and know that, you know, lots of gender roles are just purely cultural. And if we're good at art, or if we're, you know, good at doing the laundry or good at cooking or something like that, if we can just have the confidence in ourselves to own that. And I think that's where the true manhood is kind of owning up to who we are inside. And I think that'll come through, and that's what's going to give us the confidence to lead and be leaders in our family, along with our wives that are hopefully also, you know, independent and strong and challenge us and things like that. So that's, I guess, my soapbox.
Yeah, and stepping into their own confidence about all the same things.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, awesome. Adam, any closing thoughts?
Oh, just that what we've come to or during this time is that the question of how patriarchy and priesthood is experienced on a personal and a couple's level is actually pretty complex, and maybe not as black and white as the church would have us want to accept. And it really requires, you know, you go from one extreme at Stephen's level to being a stay-at-home dad and what he's working with to just, you know, the more average case where we're trying to work these issues out in our own homes. And it's not always easy, and it's worth working on.
Very good. I like that. Worth working on. Well, listeners, please work on the blog. Tell us your stories. Tell us what's working. Share with us models that are inspiring you. Go ahead and tell your horror stories, but point a way out, too. We love it, especially when we can always make these podcasts something that we can build on and still view the church as worth fighting for, the gospel as having important things to teach us, that there are stories, Stephen, that we can, you know, mine from our tradition, from our scriptures and whatnot that can really move us in positive directions. And tell us what we missed, and we'll, as a panelist, I'll try to engage it and hopefully have a great conversation. So thank you, you guys. Hope you had fun.
That was great. Thanks, Dan.
I love talking with you guys, and let's definitely do one on men's sexual training. We kind of had talked about having that big piece of it, but we'll some other time do that. And then it was Stephen, I think it was you that suggested, or maybe it was Scott who suggested that we ought to have a podcast where we have both men and women on this and really reach out towards models or something. So if anybody in the listening audience has ideas about how to set up a panel for that, I'd love to hear it. Anyway, thanks you guys very much, and thanks listeners for all your the things that you do to support the podcast, both financially and with your comments and just the private messages that you say that things are better in your life because the podcast is out there. So that really builds my confidence and strengthens my desire to keep it going.
Give Dan money.
Yay. No, people have been very generous, and I appreciate that, but it certainly is neat. So, guys, thank you very much. Good night. Hopefully, we'll have you back again real soon.
Thanks.
Okay, good night.
All right, good night.
Thank you for joining us today on Mormon Matters Podcast. To discuss this podcast with others, please check us out at mormonmatters.org. To keep this podcast alive, or to join our support community, please consider a tax-deductible donation today at mormonmatters.org. Music for this podcast was brought to you by Brittany and Clayton Pixton. The Mormon Matters logo was generously provided by StudioCase.com. Thank you for listening.
All is well.